You are Locked On Knicks, your daily podcast on the New York Knicks. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Welcome, everybody, to Locked On Knicks, the podcast that's in the 99th percentile of Wings references, both the band and the sitcom. I'm your host, James Marcina, a.k.a. Patrick Ewing, and this is episode 224. On today's show, I'm joined by Zach DeLuzio of Posting and Toasting, and we're going to talk about what the Knicks are doing schematically on offense and defense. Zach's going to help me identify things we like, things we don't like, and what we wish the Knicks would try, but they don't seem to be trying too much of. We're also going to discuss who should start while Tim Hardaway Jr. recuperates from his stress injury, and we'll discuss the polarizing play of one Michael Beasley. Let's start the show.
Yes!
All right, welcome to the show, Zach. Zach, how you doing today, man?
Hey, James. What's going on, man? I'm good.
You're good? That's good. Before we get started, I just want to make sure that I'm doing this right. Is your last name pronounced DeLuzio?
That's pretty good, man.
Are you Italian? I got a little bit of that in me.
All right, I can see it.
Yeah.
That's good.
I'm culturally Italian. Yeah. I'm like more than half, but that's all bullshit anyway, because like the Italian people are from somewhere else, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, for sure.
I don't subscribe
and shit like that.
Let's going all the way back, like Spain or somewhere first. They moved around a little bit, but cool. So I got that. All right, that's good. DeLuzio. So what we want to do today with Zach is talk about schemes. I get a lot of questions about schemes from the listeners. What are the Knicks doing with their schemes? What should they be doing with their schemes?
Love that word.
Yeah, it's a good word. I like how secretly grimy it is to like describe something that's like kind of nerdy by its nature. You know what I mean?
Like, if I asked you for some schemes, you'd be like, what?
Yeah, like what are you talking about? Schemes.
Schemes.
Yeah. So what we want to do, I've asked Zach to prepare one thing he likes, one thing he doesn't like, and one thing he wishes the Knicks would do schematically on both offense and defense, and then we're going to talk about it. All right?
Yes.
So, Zach, I want to start with one thing you don't like on defense that the Knicks are currently doing that you see.
Well, that's a layup. It's obviously the three-point defense, right? I mean, this is like out of control at this point. I feel like it's gotten better of late. But so, I don't actually know that.
So, like, when talking about the three-point defense, I mean, anyone who watches the Knicks know that they leave open three-point shooter after open three-point shooter. You know, in the past, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like we've had quotes from, like, the Kurt Rambises, the Rambi of the world, who were like, yeah, like, we're packing the paint and, like, leaving, like, the three-point line open. Like, that was, like, kind of on purpose in the past, right? I didn't make that up.
Yeah. You know, I think it was. I'm not sure. It's difficult to say, right? Because they always have had a problem with it. But they also, ever since Kristaps has gotten here, they kind of have a problem in that he's not the ideal person to be defending out to the three-point line. So it's difficult to, like, separate those two things, whether it's scheme they're doing on purpose. Right. I want to pretend they're not doing it on purpose because that would be completely moronic. Maybe I'm just putting my head in the sand here. But, you know, so those things, we can't really separate them. And also, we've never had a good defender at point guard. Now we got Frankie, but he doesn't play enough yet.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I mean, So then is it more personnel then? Like, is it just that they don't have the guys when, of course, like, we know that in order to, like, play defense in 2017, like, you do have to do a fair amount of switching. Is it that when they're, you know, switching, when they're moving off their guy, they just can't switch in time and get out to the three-point line? Is it that they're, like, doubling weirdly? Is it that they're getting lost on pick and rolls? Is it all that shit?
So, yeah, I would say it's honestly a bit of everything. I would lean towards personnel, but they definitely do overhelp, especially from the corners, which is really strange. Because that's the one shot you don't want to give up, besides like a dunk, you know, open three-point corner shots. They definitely overhelp, but, you know, with the personnel they have, you see when they put in those lineups, especially in those comebacks early in the year at Indiana, and I'm forgetting the other one, when they put in Lance and Frank, and they got Courtney Lee out there, and they're just kind of switching everything. Mm-hmm. They're really not afraid to switch so much that everything really came together. And now you got Ron back. You can maybe do a little bit more of that. But a lot of those guys come off the bench, so we don't really see them play too much together. And, you know, it's just a multifaceted issue, I think.
Okay, that's interesting. What is one thing that you like on D that the Knicks are doing?
Well, what I would say is mostly the interior defense, which is basically just Porzingis. I mean, like, let's be real. Enes Kanter isn't really doing much. I mean, credit him for getting better. But he's not protecting the rim out there. It's KP. And these guys, I mean, you see these guys every game. They're about to attack the rim. He's just standing there. They're like, nope, I want none of that.
So you think they're doing a good job of kind of communicating when they might be funneling?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. And I think that's part. I think they said, maybe they said something, maybe they didn't. I think that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to funnel it to KP and try to force them to go right at him, which I think is a good strategy if you execute it correctly.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's better than, you know, doubling off the guy in the corner and leaving him wide open for exactly. three. Because that can, I mean, to the layman, that can look like sometimes you're getting beat when you are. I mean, don't get me wrong, the Knicks get beat off the dribble plenty of times.
Right.
But, like, sometimes it is intentional to kind of, like, you know he's back there. It's a strength of your defense.
Right.
You're feeding him people to the buzzsaw.
Exactly. And that, again, that plays into the three-point defense because you want him in the middle there, but he's a four. So when you're playing against the Detroits and all those guys with these monster stretch fours, the Rockets, you kind of got to find a balance there. It's really difficult. I mean, that's the whole problem with the stretch four. It's difficult to handle them.
If Kristaps played the five more frequently, forgetting like the frequency, but like with Kristaps playing the five, does that make them better at guarding the three-point line if he doesn't have to chase fours around?
Yeah, I think absolutely, but I think that comes with trade-offs elsewhere, which is why I think they're a little hesitant to do that until it's the fourth quarter.
What changes in the fourth quarter?
Well, I think you've seen them more at center in the fourth quarter. Right. I think I actually missed the game yesterday, but I saw some stuff on Twitter. I think they did that, right? At some point, they went to him in the fourth quarter at center?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Right, so that's something they seem to break out as like a in case of emergency type thing, which I don't really mind. You know, he's going to get beat up playing the five all year.
I mean, do you think that's what it is? Like, they like the look, but it does just take too much of a toll right now to do it all game?
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. And maybe he could do it in the future. I don't know.
Yeah. I think he can. I mean, he's gotten a lot stronger in year three.
Yeah, well, that's for sure. That's very,
I mean, it's obvious. He's only 22. I mean,
right. The problem, I think, there is just the glass, because he doesn't have great rebounding instincts. He should be a better rebounder than he is, even though he's playing the four, he's out in the perimeter.
Yeah.
He just kind of gets caught looking sometimes, which I think is another thing they're worried about. But, you know, we could see where that goes. He's 22 years old. I mean, we're nitpicking him like he's in his prime, but he's 22.
And weirdly, I almost feel like his rebounding could get better as, you know, he mentioned this earlier this season, like when he was going on his initial 30-point tear, and it seemed like it, from, you know, just watching him, that, like, the game had slowed down, so to speak. But, like, I don't think it's happened all the way in all facets. Like, we've seen, like, him trying to, and we might talk about this later, but him trying to, like, pass out of double teams isn't, like, as smooth as it could be yet, right?
Yeah.
And maybe, like, when the game slows down even more for him in those situations, and he's able to read it without, like, that slight amount of panic that sets in when you don't know exactly what you're doing kind of thing.
Yeah, yes.
Like, I wonder if that could, I haven't heard people talk about that in terms of, like, rebounding ability, but that seems similar.
I think on some level, yes. On some level, no. I feel like there's certain guys that just have this feel. You know what I mean? Like, they just instinctively clear space in a way that is conducive to rebounding, like Kanter.
Yeah.
Which I don't think KP has that, but that doesn't mean he can't improve to a point where he's good enough to get by at the center position.
Yeah, I agree completely. I mean, you can see, yeah, I mean, some people just have that preternatural ability. But I can see, you know, when you're playing defense, especially in these, like, team-heavy schemes where, like, it's really, like, this one, like, multifaceted organism. I mean, it's always been that way in basketball, yeah. But, like, you know, now more than ever.
Yes.
And you're trying to keep track of everything, and when is the shot mm-hmm. release, where's my guy? And, like, it's so much easier to, like, when you're watching a game, you're like, oh, this person's there and this person's there, but, like, when you're in a game, like, you don't have eyes in the back of your head.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know? Sure. Like, you got to see past people to see other people. They're all, like, at eye level.
At game speed, you can't see everything around you. You're focusing on what you have to do. Yeah. It's difficult. It's really hard. He's got plenty of time.
Yeah, there's individual technique that comes into play. So, all kinds of things.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You guys are listening to Locked On Knicks. I want to pause for 1 second to talk about holiday cash. You need it, and I know where to get it. My bookie is the place to score serious cashish on your sports predictions. Believe it or not, I know you haven't noticed yet, but the holidays, they're just around the corner. And while that means plenty of parties, gifts, and spending, it also means there's lots of football, basketball, and hockey games that you can score big on every single day. Play like the pros on game day. You can play the money line, side, or total. MyBookie is your hookup for all your betting needs and offers super fast payouts when you win. You know what I'm saying? Like, where you bet is just as important as who you're betting on. And if you want to make money betting the games, you got to go to MyBookie.ag. They're the only site that I would recommend. I trust them. But you don't have to take my word for it. Check them out yourself. They have odds on every matchup and a mobile site that makes wagering on your smartphone a breeze. Join now, and MyBookie will match your deposit with up to a 50% bonus. Use promo code LONBA to activate that offer. Visit MyBookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. Son? So we've said one thing you like, one thing you don't like. What's one thing that you wish the Knicks would do on defense?
Well, I wish they would play... it's hard to say, right? Because, again, where they're at right now with the personnel, there's not really a right answer besides doing KP at the five, which, as we just went over, has problems. Yeah. If they did do that, now you're talking about you can throw out four guys who can switch across four positions. And you're talking about, like, I mean, that's serious business. I wish we would see that more often because I think he uses it, Hornacek uses it as a fourth quarter thing, but I wish they'd play spot minutes with it in the first half or matchup dependent. Because if you're playing the Rockets, you should not be playing Porzingis at the four for most of the game.
Yeah,
if he gets beat up, deal with it.
No, that's, I mean, it's interesting because we did hear, Hornacek say before the season started that he would, like, especially because the Knicks, you know, minus the established small forwardry of Carmelo mm-hmm. Anthony, there's a question. Now it's so established that it's like, oh, like Timmy and Courtney Lee are, like, you know, sharing duties there. But back then he was like, oh, I might change up the lineups, like, depending on, like, what the team is. And we haven't seen him do that in the starting lineup other than due to injury.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see if he ever does, or he just likes so much what he sees out of, like, Courtney Lee, which, hard to blame him, you know.
Right, exactly. And it's worked, so we can't really complain.
No.
But, you know, I guess they really like continuity, I think. They really like to get those same guys out there, especially when they tend to bring Beasley in with the same lineups, and they bring Kyle Quinn and McDermott together. It seems like there's an emphasis on that, which it could be good or bad.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk more about lineups in, like, a little bit. I mean, it's almost impossible to divorce that from our conversation.
Right. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, but for the sake of the show's structure, which we must preserve, let's continue on with. Let's go to offense now.
Okay.
What's one thing you like schematically that the Knicks are doing right now on offense?
So I think what I like the best is, this may not be a popular answer, which is why I like it. There's a nice focus on inside out play, and that can get a little too far. Mm-hmm. But when you look at Jeff Hornacek's breakout team in Phoenix, right? You look back at that lineup: Isaiah Thomas, Goran Dragic, Eric Bledsoe. And really guard-centric team. They didn't really have much big man talent. He worked around it. They played really fast. They played from the perimeter, a lot of high screen and roll. Now we're looking at a very different situation where there's, like, no guard talent on this team, especially a point guard. So you have to play through your bigs a little bit more.
Yeah.
And he's done a good job of finding that balance there. They play a lot through Porzingis in the post, which is obviously a good thing, although he can get a little crazy there.
Mm-hmm.
They like to run the horn set with two guys at the elbows and two shooters in the corners. They like to run that on the bench with Kyle Quinn at the elbow, and they run McDermott off some screens, and he gets all the back cuts like that.
Mm-hmm.
That I really like watching that. That's something that I find enjoyable.
The only time I don't like that is, and to be fair, I only saw this like twice the other day, but they spent like 15 minutes trying to establish Lance Thomas at the elbow for one of those horn sets, and I was having like NOM flashbacks to last year with the Knicks taking like 3 hours to set up Carmelo on the elbow every single play. I was like, oh my god, please no.
Yeah, especially Lance. Like,
I love Lance, but
I really do too. I really love him, but he is not the guy you want to be getting the ball.
Yeah, let's not spend half the shot clock trying to get Lance's Gasolian vision.
Exactly. He's not going to jab step over there and make a nice dime to the corner. Just chill.
Yeah. He's going to do his weird, like, falling over sardine shot.
It is amazing how often he falls over while he's, like, posting up.
Yeah. It looks like someone, like, knocking over, like, a needle. I don't know. Like, he like, falls, like, more straight up than anyone I've ever seen before.
Which is weird because he's, like, a strong dude.
Yeah.
He's not weak.
He's ripped.
Yeah. He's just falls over every time. He must have terrible balance.
He's a super strong nerd, which is someone you gotta be afraid of in real life. You never want to fuck with a Jack nerd. They've got so much years of pent up like anger.
Yeah, for real.
And his cancer. I mean, come on, that guy's not cool.
Yeah, my man.
Yeah, I love him. Not a cool guy though.
No, he's really something.
Yeah, he really is. I asked you one thing that you liked on offense.
Yes.
What is something that you don't like on offense? I mean, I can already talk about just the flip side of what you said. I do think that there's like I don't know if it's they think that they've got the right personnel like and who they're matching up with to do this, but they seem to get stuck in a rut sometimes where they will run the same action like 7 times in a row, mm-hmm. whether or not it's like effective. Like if you're scoring every like half the time, like sure, keep going at it. But
right.
It seems like sometimes they butt their heads against the wall. I don't know if that's like because they're young and practicing or something I'm not picking up on, I just don't see, or Hornacek's not doing a great job in that moment, or the players are not doing a great job. Like, there's so many variables there. It's tough to kind of...
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I wish we could get someone in there kind of questions, you know what I mean? Like, they're throwing out the shit about the triangle. Like, can we get someone to ask this kind of question right here? Because that's a great question, and I don't know the answer.
They don't credential people for that. You'd probably get a lot of coach speak. You know, but still,
yeah,
it would be...
Right, he might get something.
You can interpret coach speak. They may not tell you what they're saying, but you can be like, okay, he doesn't want to say this.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they do that. Sometimes it works. I think I saw something on Twitter. They ran the same play a bunch of times in overtime yesterday. That seemed to work based on my interpretation of those tweets.
Yeah.
They like to do it with the bench. They run that horn set for Kyle that I mentioned.
Yeah.
But you're right. Sometimes you just do kind of the same thing over and over, and you're like, it's not working. What are you doing? And maybe that's execution. Maybe they didn't do it right. And they want to do it again, better timing. Maybe it'll work. Maybe they see something they think they can take advantage of.
It can be infuriating. But you know, we do see sometimes that it's effective. Like, I forget what game it was where KP and Timmy were just running their two-man game in the fourth quarter.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the Raptors one. Yeah, that was fantastic.
It was amazing. And it just worked. And they were doing, like, a couple different actions out of it. And
And the Raptors were trying all different ways to defend it, and nothing was working. And they were, like, bugging out. It was so funny watching Kyle Lowry. He was, like, freaking out. It's really great. When you get them throwing their hands up after Tim Hardaway Jr. dunks the ball, that's when you know you're doing it right.
Anytime you can get into someone's head and like see them frustrated, it's just great,
so satisfying.
Great petty sports fan moment. Yeah, like to see someone throwing a temper tantrum, a coach getting teched up on the opposite team is like the best.
It's what I live for.
Because they're
really
because they're paid to like keep their cool, and when you know, I know they do it strategically, but still,
yeah,
not always.
Oh, beautiful. It is a beautiful thing.
Is there anything else that you don't like schematically that the Knicks have been doing on O that's been bugging you?
Well,
there doesn't have to be.
Yeah, they so with KP, I know there's been a lot, you know, people talk a lot about how he doesn't really pass as much as you would like. And I agree with it. I don't think it's a problem because, again, he's 22 years old. But it is something I think could be worked on. Especially, so I don't really mind it so much on the post-ups. When he has his back and he has good position and he goes to work, that's fine. I don't really mind that. But the face-ups have kind of not really, doesn't seem like the most effective way to go about it. Especially because he tends to go to his dribble first. I don't know. He doesn't. If he, you know how Melo does it, he plays off the jump shot and then uses it to attack, which I would like better. He doesn't quite have that yet, which is, again, fine.
Yeah.
But what, he turns the ball over so much. He goes to that crossover, and teams have figured it out, and they just dig right in there, grab the ball from him.
I think it's because, like, it's hard for him to not want to flex.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Which I can't blame him at all.
Oh, please.
Yeah, take the analyst hat off. If I'm not wanting the Knicks to win a game, if I want entertainment, I want him to do that all the time. Because once in a while he pulls it off.
I'm 7'3 on the Knicks. I'm out there throwing up 35, 10, 5, and 5-3 pointers. Like, yeah, I got a big head. I'm going to try to like take this guy off the dribble like too much.
Exactly.
At 22? Yeah. Like, right. I'm 35 now, and I don't think I'd be able to. I'd be above that. Like,
exactly. When I was 22, oh man, I
forget it.
God knows what I'd be doing in his position.
Yeah,
so
I'd
totally forget it.
I'd be face down in a drain pool somewhere, not in the NBA. when I was 22.
Yeah, right, exactly. And, so it's hard to blame him.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
What could he do? And you know they don't have enough on the. If you had someone. Man, I like Jared Jack a lot, but we all know he's not actually good.
Sure.
If you had someone who's better than him, you're getting him easier shots. You could cut down on those kind of possessions. And he's going to get better at them anyway, but...
I agree with all of that, like, very much. And nights like last night, like, there were a bunch of times where I was like, oh, come on, you're just trying to, like, get bailed out with a foul call, blah, blah, blah. But then the next highest scorer on the team had 14 points.
Was it that bad?
Oh. Yeah. It was.
Wow. You know.
Like, so it was, and they weren't doing a great job of moving the ball, and that was part of it, but, like, the other part was that, like, no one was putting the ball in the basket. I mean, that's why Beasley was getting crunch time minutes.
Yep.
Like, and they actually desperately needed Beasley's contribution last night. Like,
yes, which is insane. Completely insane. But that's exactly what it is. And that's what happens.
So, in those situations, if you know, for the sake of winning, Kristaps is forcing a little bit more than he normally would. Like, as long as he kind of knows. And again, this is one of these things that we can't see. Like, what does the coaching staff tell him afterward? Like, that kind of thing.
Exactly.
So, but you don't want to see those habits become, like, calcified. But,
right. Because you kind of see like a little bit of Melo, and I think people are giving him too much crap for it because there's no real alternative at this point in time.
Oh, I see it all the time, and I try to refrain from it because I don't want to be one of these people who people accuse of being like, you're obsessed with Melo, which is like so unfair. I'm like, can I occasionally talk about like the superstar who was here for the past 7 years? Like, yes, he is still on my mind sometimes. Guilty as charged, you know.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. It makes sense, too, because he's been teaching him
the
past couple years. And that's good. He's helped him. He's taken a lot of his moves, to be honest.
Yeah. To mostly to good effect. But then you see the bad things, too, sometimes.
Right.
You're like, good thing he's gone.
Yeah.
Is there anything that we haven't covered that you would like to see the Knicks do on offense? Something that you would... think would make them more successful given like who they've got.
It's honest. Yeah. What I really want to see is just a real point guard. And that's not, I'm a big believer in Frank Ntilikina. Let me say that right now.
Yeah.
I think he's going to be so good that I should probably keep it to myself because I'm going to sound like an idiot, but
I've been ringing that bell for like the past 3 months. So.
Yep. And I've heard you talk about it. And I'm proud of you. And I want you to keep doing it because people don't realize because no one watches the Knicks.
When you see that vision, I mean, that's no joke. Yeah. Like we talked about people having like preternatural rebounding ability. Like his vision is serious.
That is exactly it. That is very well put. And you saw it last night. I was watching his highlights. And he threw some just they look easy. They're the kind of thing you see in soccer players where you see a guy making a break and you put it in a certain spot where you could run right onto it.
Yep. We were talking about this. We were talking about this in the Posting and Toasting Slack today, for those of you who are not in the Posting and Toasting Slack. But yeah, Frank, like, he passes, like you said, like a soccer player or like a quarterback. Like, he passes people, like, into open space.
Exactly.
With enough pace on the ball, like, threaded through weird, you know, through, like, traffic or around people. It's, like, incredibly difficult.
It really is, especially because everyone knows he's going to pass the ball. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, he has open lanes to the rim that he doesn't take all the time. And they still, you know, he still gets them through. So when he becomes, you know, good enough to get there to the rim and finish with confidence, he's going to play off that and it's going to be spectacular. Yeah. But the point being, he's not there yet, obviously. I mean, he's generally not very good on offense at this point.
He's not, that's correct. Right. That's correct.
And Jack is 34, and to his credit, he's been way better than I expected.
Yeah, he's done a great job. I mean, for what you could expect out of him, he's done a great job.
Exactly. So I don't want to be too hard on him, but he's not good either.
that's also correct. That's fair.
Right. So you got nobody pressuring people. You got nobody pressuring the defense from the point guard position, which is what you need to really get those wide open 3-point shots for Doug McDermott and Courtney Lee. And they still get them in large part because of KP.
And maybe that's it, because I was like, my one thing that I always harp on, which sometimes I feel foolish because the Knicks almost never win by shooting more 3-pointers than their opposition. So you're like, well, clearly there's ways to like win, you know, without like shooting the most 3-pointers. Yes. But they got to shoot more 3-pointers, like, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I do think that's part of the problem in generating those threes, because you don't want to just chuck them up, right?
No. Like, yes.
So you want to get the good ones, and they do a decent job of that, but it's not great. But
I feel like the percentage of threes that they generate are pretty good. Like, they're not jacking, like, shitty threes just to jack them, which is good.
Yes, exactly.
Maybe that just limits, like, how high they can go. Like, you could be, like, a 500 team in the NBA not shooting more three-pointers than someone, but, like, eventually you're going to have to outshoot someone. Like,
yeah, I agree. And they to their credit, they know what they do well. They stick to that generally. KP has a great mid-range game, so use it. He's a great three-point shooter, but teams pay him so much attention now that it's harder to get him those looks when you don't have a great point guard.
I wonder if it's almost because it's like demoralizing for like a walking tree to hit a three-pointer from 30 feet out. It's almost like they guard it the way you guard someone like windmill slamming against you because it can like fire up the crowd.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
It does matter. That's a very... It's a thing that's not talked about enough, the psychology of it. Because when he just walks up and he hits a three in your face and you get a good contest on him, you're like, what the hell am I supposed to do?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Like, he just pulls up right over you. That's it. There's nothing you can do about it. And it's demoralizing. It is.
It
and he gets
be.
Confidence, too.
Yeah. And I've been talking about this, the secret, like impact of, like, sunning on psychology. And... Because I think there's secretly like more benefit to offensive rebounding. I know that that's like kind of fallen out of favor.
I actually 100% agree with you.
Because like when I'm watching a game, and it only hit me like a couple weeks ago, and then I talked about it on the podcast. When I'm watching a game and the Knicks give up like two offensive rebounds to the other team in a row, like you just want to like shoot yourself and be like, I'm done.
Exactly. Like, you're in your chair and they play a great defensive possession. They force a mid-range jumper. The guy misses. Mm-hmm. You're like, yeah, let's go. Push the ball. And then they just grab an offensive rebound. You're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
And that's exactly how they feel on the floor. It's the exact same thing.
Yeah, that's got to affect them. Like,
no question.
Yeah.
That's 100% right. I'm glad you said that, because people don't talk about that enough. It's the psychology of it.
Yeah, it's a big deal. I mean, we've talked about this on Twitter back and forth, how video gaming psychology is very similar to sports psychology.
Yes.
And that's like a whole other podcast. And
yes, it is.
Now that I'm thinking about it, we should probably do that. So I'll
I'd be so down. That would be a good one.
I'll leave that out there as like a tantalizing tease for another day. You guys are listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. If you like what you hear, head on over to iTunes and rate us 5 stars. Every 5-star rating counts. Thank you very much. Once again, that's Locked On Knicks. Let's move on. Like, we've been like dancing around or explicitly discussing the Knicks personnel as we've talked about schemes. Like, one goes with the other. And there's a big personnel question around the Knicks right now with Tim Hardaway Jr. Being out for a significant amount of time. He's going to miss at least another week, probably more. But while he's out, the Knicks have played around with a couple of different starting lineups. And Zach, I'm wondering what starting lineup like you think the Knicks should go with. If there is only one, should it vary by opponent? Should you like ride the hot hand? You know, just what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I think it's tough, right? Because I want to say you put in Doug McDermott and you just start him at the three because it brings a gravity as a shooter that Lance Thomas just does not have. I mean, they disrespect Lance Thomas so bad. They put big men on him. Like, well, let him shoot 30s, whatever. It's fine. We don't care at all. All kinds of stuff like that, which makes sense, you know? But no one's going to do that to McDermott. But on the other hand, then you look at that bench unit that would come in, and you're like, who is going to score?
Yeah. It's weird because their offensive rating is much higher than their defensive rating, and yet many nights I'm like, damn, like the offense is the problem. Like, especially without Tim. I don't know if maybe those stats don't hold true without Tim. That's something I'd have to actually look at. But like without him, I'm like, man, this team can't score. Like,
right. And it's accurate. That's why Beasley's been getting so much burn lately.
Yeah.
Because he could put the ball in the hoop.
Yeah. So your short answer there then would be,
well, I honestly think it's
like you think McDermott, they should give him a look.
Maybe, but then you're disrupting the bench unit, right? Because he has great chemistry with O'Quinn, and Lance can't do that. So you're taking that away, which in turn means Kyle Quinn is going to think he's Anthony Davis again. You know what I'm talking about, where he starts doing that jab step, and he starts taking every mid-range jumper, trying to take dudes off the dribble.
Yeah.
And sometimes it works, but sometimes,
I mean,
really,
when he's good, he's so valuable. But the other night, I was kind of like, all right, next time he goes on a hot streak, like, let's trade him. Like,
right. That's his whole thing.
I know his salary is nothing, so he's like a great asset no matter what he gives you, sort of.
Yeah.
But his inconsistency, like, just drives me crazy enough that I'd rather, like, just trade for a pick for him.
It really is maddening because you watch the first 10 games of this season, and you're like, wow, this guy is so good. This is so great. He's finally putting it together, and then it's just gone.
Yeah, and they're much worse when he doesn't play well. Like that, I think that's been a big part too. Like he also had a dip at the same time as like Chris Stapps and Timmy got hurt. Yep. Like Cantor got hurt. It kind of all happened at once.
Yeah.
And that like really made the Knicks look very ugly for a couple of games.
So then you're taking away his pass, his man, him and McDermott got that thing right. So Lance is not going to do that. So now, where's your offense coming from on the bench? You just got to give it to Beasley and hope it goes well.
Talking about Doug is like making me like Lance less. I'm like he's like Mr. Intangibles. I'm like, why isn't he cutting off the ball the way Doug is?
Yeah, like, it is weird. He's an interesting player himself, but he just doesn't do that at all.
Yeah, he doesn't really bring much to the table, does he?
No, at least not on offense. I really like him defensively, but man.
I'm just sad now.
right?
I'm coming to grips with the fact that like a relationship's ending, and you're like, I don't even hate her. It's just like we both know it's not right.
right. Exactly. And that's the thing. So you bring him in with the starting lineup for defense. Okay, that makes sense because the scorers around him can help prop that up.
Yeah.
Which I guess is the idea. But then in turn, you got three guys you don't really have to guard.
They've looked bad with him in the starting lineup. Like, it's not working.
Right. And, I mean, play someone to two. They tried Dotson. Maybe try that again.
Yeah. He's super raw, too. I think he's going to be good. Yeah. But
I do, too. I'm a big fan of him. Yeah. He's going to come around. People are going to start noticing next year.
Next year, you think?
Yeah, he is raw. You're exactly right. He doesn't quite, you know, have that feel yet. He does have a good feel, but you know what I mean with the rookies. They're just kind of all over the place. Like, they got ADD or something.
But also, like, you know, like we've seen with Billy to a certain extent, like, he's not getting the minutes. When he has gotten some minutes, like 15 minutes in a game here and there, like, he's, like, okay. Like, he looks better when he's out there more, like anyone would, you know.
Yeah. He's like, a little scared to shoot. There are times where I'm like, dude, shoot that. You're, like, you're a great shooter. Take that shot. And he doesn't want to.
Yeah.
And he's a great defender, though, already, which is, I mean, you look at these guys, these young guards, you got three guys who can defend at a high level. It's fantastic.
It's so exciting, because, like, people can get better at offense, so it's really exciting to see a stable of young defensive guards and hope, like, okay, maybe some of them will get better at offense. Then, like, I know, like, ultimately, to be effective in the NBA, you got to bring something on both ends of the floor. Like, especially, yep. I mean, if you're a starter, like, absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, but it's so much, it can be dispiriting when someone's, like, terrible offensively when they're young. But I'm sick of watching these guys who are, like, pretty good offensively but have nothing on defense and then them never panning out. And then that player sucks. Like, if you suck on defense and are just a huge negative, it usually doesn't matter how good you are on offense.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes. So. And obviously there's exceptions to a degree, but those guys, you know, you're talking about like Jamal Crawford types, and you can get those guys. That's not the type of thing you get excited about. And you look at Dotson, he's already defending at a high level, and we know he can shoot the ball. It's just a question of getting him settled, and he'll be good. I have no question.
Yeah,
I think he's going to be a good player. So, you know, hey, you see it with Ron right now, right? Last year, Ron couldn't hit a freaking jump shot for his life. It was crazy.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden he hits a couple and you're like, wow, Ron just had an awesome game. He had a huge impact.
Yeah. And I never think he's going to be like an incredible point guard, but he's had a couple nice like pocket passes in the pick and roll recently.
Yeah.
Driving kicks. Like, he's shown that he can do a little bit of creating.
Exactly, and that's just another piece. That's what you're adding these pieces, and they can defend. That's the most important thing for us.
Yeah.
It may not be the most important thing, but for Knicks fans, that's
oh my god, yeah.
Important.
It's just to reiterate. I said it sort of sloppily, but it's so nice to root for guys who like pretty much have it together on the defensive end and hope they can put it together on offense. Like,
oh my god,
we've
right?
Been so starved for defense, and I don't want like '90s ball to return where people don't score. But
yeah,
I want defenders who care. You can still have that and like score a lot. You know?
And everyone wants it. You see it. They cheer just as hard for great defensive possessions as they do for monster dunks.
I love it. It's crazy to me that like with how much money there is in New York that the home crowd hasn't been completely ruined by just like rich assholes who don't know anything.
Right.
But
what's coming?
It's well, get one playoff appearance and then no one will ever be able to afford a Knicks game again.
Right. It's already $80 anyway.
I know, it's crazy. The nosebleeds are really $80.
Yeah. Like, man, I go to 2 games a year, that's it. I wish I could go more than that, but
that's about where I'm at.
Yeah.
You're not going to go there and like not have a couple beers, which are each like $12 or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and imagine if they ever made like even the Eastern Conference Finals. That's it.
Yep.
Oh my god.
You've been Golden Stated then.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
you know.
Hey, but it'll be worth it.
Oh yeah, I'll take it. Yeah. Life is one adult life. In 2017 is one horrifying compromise after another, just to keep your sanity. You're like, all right,
Succinct. Very well done. What do you think? Who do you think should be starting?
Like you, honestly, I think every answer poses huge problems. I'm of the mind where if the starting lineup is like playing as bad as it is right now, I would really like to give them a look at McDermott. And I know, because they're like, you talk about their bench chemistry, but, like, I was looking at, like, 5-man lineups the other day from, like, a random game. And there were, like, 17 of them or something. or, like, 12. You know, like, the most used lineup was their starting lineup, which got, like, 9 minutes. The next most was, like, a bench-heavy lineup, which got, like, 7 minutes. And then there was, like, a lineup of, like, 5-5-4-4-4-4-3-3-2-2. Like... Mm. They're throwing out so many different combinations. I don't know how precious it really needs to be about, like, you know, keeping together, like, whatever. Like, I feel like you can still find time to put successful combos together while
That's
shaking up the starting lineup.
Yeah. And, you could probably play some games. I'm not good with, like, the rotations where you say, oh, you pull him and then put him in and then put him in 2 minutes later. And then you could get those two guys together. But there's definitely a way to jigger it so you could get both of those things.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Minimize it. Yeah, that's a good point.
If even you only like put him in for like 5 minutes or something to start,
right?
Or 4 minutes, whatever, you know, some small amount. See how it works. Maybe you get out to, you know, this quote's been floating around. I don't know why I keep seeing it. Like Daryl Morey was like, good teams don't win close games. Good teams avoid close games. And I think they were talking about Oklahoma City losing
that's
a bunch.
Interesting quote. I mean,
it makes sense. It does make sense. I keep seeing, it's like, I think people were talking about it a lot in the context of Oklahoma City, like, losing a bunch of close games. Why is their point differential so high, but their win-loss record so low? And it's The answer is obviously because Carmelo Anthony is a cancer. We all know that.
I was wondering if you're going to take that direct shot or just go a little slower.
No, I had to go. I started on the podcast with the slow burn Carmelo hate, but I've had to be honest with myself. It's full bore. No, but like, but maybe, you know, like maybe you're, maybe you go up by 10 quickly if you play McDermott there, and then the bench like gives it back a little bit, but that's tiring for the opposition, you know.
Yeah, that's a good point, especially because Doug has been pretty impressive on defense. I mean, he's not a great defender, but I remember watching him in Chicago, and I was like, oh my God, this guy is a complete disaster.
Yeah.
He has no hope. There's no chance. And here he is, being fine, being competent.
Yeah. I mean, he played all 5 minutes of overtime, so maybe that was kind of like Horny's getting ready to throw him in the starting lineup.
That's a good point, too. Maybe it's more about who closes, although I do kind of agree with you. You want to get out to a good start.
It makes a difference. People always focus on the fourth quarter, and, like, that's important, like, obviously. But you go up by 15, that, you know, early, like, that influences a lot, you know. That really increases your chances. Like,
yes. It gives your coach more leeway. And, again, with the mentality, especially with this team that can't play on the road, you come out, you punch them in the mouth, and you get a 15-point lead, you know, you're feeling pretty good. And maybe you settle in better than you did if you are completely ineffective on offense for the first 5 minutes of the game.
Yeah, totally. You get the changes to your whole mentality. You're not like, oh, this shit again.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. I want to ask you, all right, we're going to do something we've done occasionally on the show before. It's been a couple of guests since we've done it. I want you to first, it's kind of like a two-parter.
All right.
This helps us, like, get to know our guests a little bit and get to know the Knicks a little bit at the same time. I want you to name a favorite musical artist.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh. That's tough. What am I even listening to right now? See, I have this problem where I don't listen to enough new music.
Yeah.
Because I think I'm becoming an old man. I think this is starting to happen because I just sort of recycle all the same crap
but that, hey,
I've been listening to.
Let me tell you this. The first two people I asked both said Jadakiss.
Jadakiss?
Yeah.
Oh, huh.
Which is like fine, but I was like, wow, two in a row. Yeah. Huh.
Oh, that's interesting.
It was Jared Dubin and then Ian Begley. They're both like, yeah, Jadakiss.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
Oh, that's interesting. I have been listening to Right Where You Stand, which is Jadakiss and Gangstar. I love that song. That's a great track. But right now, I've been bumping up a lot of Black Star.
Okay.
That album is, whew, man, that is good stuff. I just love it. And I found it recently. This is like a new thing for me. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
is it Am Black Star? Is that the name of the...
Yeah, I think so.
The
good
one with, what's his name? Yasin Bey?
Yeah, oh, man.
Mos Def and Talib Kweli.
Oh, those guys.
That's a classic.
Yeah, they got some nice beats on there, too.
I listened to that one a million times in college, and not really since, but it's definitely, like, etched on my brain.
Yeah.
So let's say you like Black Star. I want you to name something from their personal or professional life. So it could be, like, a song, a lyric, a beat, I don't know, scandal they were involved with that describes Michael Beasley.
Oh, my God.
And we can talk it through. You know what I mean?
Like trying to think, right?
Like, if you're trying to, like, find something from Black Star that describes Michael Beasley, like, what adjectives, like, maybe for Beasley are you trying to match up with this Black Star thing?
I had a tweet the other day that I thought really summed it up the best, which is that putting Michael Beasley in the game is like playing Russian roulette with four bullets in the gun. So I would say something like involving gambling, you know, because you when you put him out there, you're rolling the dice.
You are.
Because a lot of games, he's just...
Well, I've talked about his decision-making process, which is my biggest problem with him, and it seems completely randomly generated.
Exactly. Like, that's exactly it.
I don't think he's, like, reading the defense.
No.
You know,
he just does... I feel like passing it this time. I passed it last possession, so now I'm shooting this ball.
Uh-huh, yes, exactly. Exactly right. Into, like, some triple team.
Oh, my God, this guy. So I'm trying to think, like, if they have any lyrics that mention gambling. I don't know much about their background, to be honest.
Yeah, that's fair.
People. So, I don't know, they're rolling dice on the corner? Is that thing they did?
I don't know. They're conscious rappers. They're backpack rappers.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure they do have a line that perfectly encapsulates him. That's the thing. But I'd have to pour through their lyrics.
This could be, you know, let's see. Definition, redefinition.
Yeah, that's my channel.
He's the redefinition. We didn't get all the way there. But you know what? we talked about some musical preferences from our guest. We talked about Michael Beasley.
Yeah, I'm going to get back to you on that one.
Yeah. Maybe in the future. It could be, I could have formatted it wrong. It could be in the future. I need to insist, like, give me one of your all-time favorites. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Is that a better question? Should I scrap this whole segment, Zach? What do you think?
No, I think that's a good one. That's a good one. Although, just off the cuff, I'm just like, I'm completely overwhelmed right now.
Yeah,
like,
it's tough. Because you know what? Maybe I should warn people about that one, the way we did some segments. Because that's like such a big deal, too. You want to seem cool, you know? You're like,
exactly. That's right now, I do not look cool. I'm like, I want Black Star Man. You know, like, tie it in with Michael Beasley. I'm like,
you're like, I think they rap.
Exactly right.
There's probably a gun in there somewhere.
Yeah, Michael Beasley's a rapper too, right? That's fine.
He's rapping out there on the court.
Yeah, exactly. See, there you go. We just did it.
It's rap in motion.
Doesn't make any sense, but that doesn't matter.
But it's perfect. I got one last thing that's... I want to tap you for your expert medical opinion. Is it fucking crazy that Enes Kanter is being allowed to play right now? He says he's at like 40-50%.
What's his problem? I haven't gotten an exact answer. I know he had crutches, but I thought it was his back or something.
They're being very vague about it. Like, he has back pain, hip pain. He can play through it. Hornacek's like, in my day, like, we would feel bad for 2 months and all of a sudden feel better. I'm like, is that true?
That's odd. That's not generally how injuries work.
Yeah, that's usually not. Yeah, but
I don't know. I mean, look, I'm proud that he wants to fight through it. That's impressive, and I think the team probably responds to that.
Yeah,
but come on,
it's wrong. It's the wrong.
Yeah,
I mean, I've talked about this a lot on the show. At this point, like, the Knicks draft position kind of like is what it is. Like, it's not going to move too much.
Yeah.
I don't think they can tank so much. Like, no matter what they do, but...
There's no way.
If they lose a bunch of games, like, they might improve by a little bit in the draft position, and that's fine.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I don't know why they've got to, like, risk it with someone, but maybe they don't see him in their long-term plans and are, like, Machiavellian. Like, just, all right, you can play. Get us in the playoffs.
Yeah, cool. And it's fine. But... It's all good.
Yeah.
I don't know. Especially him, he's such a physical player. I don't see how it's not going to get aggravated, but maybe, I mean, they know better than we do. Then again, it's the Knicks.
Yeah.
So it's always just like balanced.
I can't get over, like, I don't trust Phil Jackson at all, but that story of him wanting to fire the medical staff and then being like, no. Because it was one of the first things we're like, oh, Phil's going to have total control. And then we heard that, like, he couldn't replace the medical staff. And the Knicks have been, like, notorious at being like, it's nothing. And then the guy has a broken kneecap or whatever.
Exactly. And, he's playing, so he can't be that bad. Knock on wood right now.
I don't want him to be, like, a Paul Pierce-style exaggerator of injuries, but he does have some ham to him.
Yeah.
He's a little bit of a ham, Enes. So.
My God. Oh, he does. And that would be it, right? Like the Ben Roethlisberger where he's like, oh, man, I'm hurting so much.
Yeah.
And then he's on the injury report every day, and then he goes out there and plays, and he looks fine.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm not going to judge him for it. Like, when I get the sniffles, I, like, tap out of house chores for, like, 2 weeks. You know?
Right?
So,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. Hey, I don't mind it. Let's get some excitement.
Yeah, there you go. I think that's it. For today, Zach.
All right.
It was really fun talking to you. Do you have anything that you're trying to plug before we go?
Not right now. Thanks for having me, though, James. I wrote an article last week about Jarrett Jack, but that's that's up on Posting and Toasting if you look far back enough.
Yes.
And I'll have stuff out eventually. I'm an annoying perfectionist with what I do, so it takes me so freaking long to get the stuff done.
Well, you do a great job. Everyone thanks, always really likes your shit. I love it too.
I'm enjoying the podcast. Keep it up.
All right. Thanks, man.
All right. Take it easy, James.
That was fun, huh? Huh? I really like talking to Zach. We've been playing like podcast tag for a little bit, haven't been able to get him on, but I finally reeled in the big fish. He writes great breakdowns of what the Knicks are doing on the court for Posting and Toasting. I highly encourage you guys to seek those out. They're all excellent. That's it for us for today. I want to thank you guys so much for joining us, for joining me, your host, James Marcita. Got to get in my own personal branding there. If you like the show, rate us on iTunes. 5 stars. It would really help. Follow us on Twitter, LockedOnKnicks. You can follow me on Twitter at NBA Injury Report. And be chill to each other. I'd really like to see that. That being said, it's just the new way I'm going to transition to everything. That being said, in both the podcast and my real life, and see how many people I alienate and who stop talking to me. That being said, join us tomorrow for another episode of Locked On Knicks.